What's up? It's your boys, Jordan and Abraham. As always, he's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. And I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece. If you're listening to us on Spotify, please take a moment to rate us 5 stars and feel free to reach out to us at our YouTube page, Friends Who Read One Piece, or on Twitter at FWROP Pod. We always look forward to hearing from you. Okay. Jordan, there's no chapter this week. So, as usual with my free time, one of the things that I was doing this week was watching some Morge videos, because that's just one of my pastimes, just
It's a passion.
consuming
It's a
content.
passion, you know? It's
And
like some of
he
us
came
like
out.
being really good at running, and some of us like watching Mr. Morge videos, you know?
We can't all be great at everything.
Some of us like learning languages, and others of us like watching Mr. Morge videos, you know?
Well, he came out with a video this past week where he basically identified what he thought the 7 remaining factions are in One Piece that are competing for the One Piece, competing to in the end game of the series. And the 7 factions that he identified were the Marines, the World Government, the Straw Hat Pirates, the Blackbeard Pirates, Cross Guild, and the Revolutionary
Revolutionary.
Army. Am I forgetting one? Blackbeard, Straw Hats, and the Red Hair Pirates. Sorry, and the Red Hair Pirates. Those 7. Those were the 7 fa the 4 Yonkos, the Marines, World Government, and the Revolutionary Army. And he essentially power ranked them. And I thought it would be fun if the two of us could put out our own list, what we think. The at this point in the story right now, I'll say, not projecting into the future, but how we would rank those 7 factions personally, because I feel like there's going to be some fun disagreements here.
Oh, why don't we just start with yours and I'll just be critical of
That
it? You want,
is
how
kind
about
of
we just
how
do
we
that, you know?
that is kind of how we normally do things. I'm fine with that. So at the bottom, for me, pretty clearly was Cross Guild. I don't know if you disagree with that.
I think
You
just
good with
about
that?
everyone seems to disagree with that. Their whole leader is pretty whack, not that strong. Mihawk is S tier, but basically everyone has an S tier character in their crew at
Yeah,
some point.
that's pretty much it, right? Like, I think at this point in the story, Luffy and Mihawk are probably like same kind of level. And then Mihawk just has no one else to support him. He's got Crocodile, who's, decent, but like there's no one else after that, so
Like
I think
Luffy
it's
beat him when he had a bounty of 100 million.
well, Crocodile's power scaling has post time skip has not been the same.
It's
It's been inconsistent, right? But
Yeah, it's been
even
inconsistent.
with Crocodile, I think they're pretty clearly the weakest group of the 7. And the next one for me had to be the Revolutionary Army. So it's hard to judge how strong I think the Revolutionary Army is, because we don't know how strong Dragon is. And I do think the longer that Oda withholds a character from us, the stronger that they tend to be. Like, I think Shanks is going to be the strongest Yonko, even since we're getting
I
him
mean,
right at the end.
that seems to be outside of maybe Blackbeard at some point, that seems to be decisively true after the way he manhandled Kid, who was half of a duo that was able to take down Kaido and Big Mom. They certainly didn't one-shot him like Shanks did.
So acknowledging that Dragon is probably going to be pretty strong, I think despite that, the rest of the Revolutionary Army just doesn't have enough top tier fighters for me to rate them all that highly. I think if they had a healthy Kuma, that maybe I might be able to move them up a little bit on the list. But right now, I don't think Ivankov is that level of fighter. I think Sabo, I don't think Sabo is on that same kind of level as someone like Luffy is right now, right? I think he's probably somewhere like a Yonko commander kind of level. And then I think the rest of the commanders of the Revolutionary Army, like Morley and Beto Belly and all of those other people, just don't, like, they stack up with characters like Robin and Franky to me. So I don't see how I could put them any higher on my list, to be honest. I don't know what you think about that, but
I would generally have them a little bit higher, but I think let's hear how
really.
exactly the rest of your list shakes out. I think that Once again, we have an idea at the very least that Dragon is some kind of S-tier criminal. He's called the world's most dangerous criminal. That can obviously be in some part, not just because of his actual strength, but because of what he is trying to do and how anathema his mission is to the world government. We did see this dude literally call forth lightning from the sky to pinpoint
Well,
strike.
that's not confirmed. That's
Oh
speculation, but
yeah, okay, yeah. I mean, that's like speculation, you know,
hey.
that's like when you were telling me that the Seraphim were the seven warlords.
Yeah, and you refused to believe me. It was so
Yeah,
obvious. It
I was
was
being dumb.
so
Hey, I just said it wasn't 100%, but that's what I'm saying. It is so obvious.
obvious.
It's so obvious with it's so obvious with Dragon showing up and Smoker's reaction later in Marineford about it. I think it's difficult because we don't know the strength of a lot of those commanders. They could be stronger than we actually expected. I do think that characters like Ivankov, who were actually reasonable players in, well, obviously in Impel Down and even in Marineford, characters who get played for a joke a lot don't often get considered as strong as they actually are. I think a good example of that is Boa Hancock, who was someone who, with our friend Duncan, who was doing his power rankings, I was arguing forever that she was like ahead of Doflamingo or something. And only once she ended up with like a 1.4 billion did he finally acknowledge that, even though she had Conqueror's Haki when she was a little kid. I think that with someone like Ivankov, because Ivankov's played for such a joke, we don't actually give them the credit of how strong that
That
character is.
could be true. I'll say one last thing that might be suppressing the Revolutionary Army in my head is that Dragon doesn't need to be a strong fighter to be a threat to the world government, right? Like, just his position as the head of the Revolutionary Army is in and of itself a threat. I obviously think that he will be one of those top tier fighters, but I guess I'm factoring like there's a small possibility that maybe he's not even like that guy in terms of combat strength, but who knows?
He can call forth lightning, bro.
So yeah,
Man,
so could NL.
just tell me who's next. Yeah, and I'm pretty strong. You just tell me he can bring forth lightning, bro. Tell me who's next, man. That
So
man call forth lightning.
the next group that I had were the Marines. So the reason why I ranked the Marines at five below all of the what I'll call the real Yonko crews, because I'm not including Cross Guild there, is because I thought that in Marine Ford, while they pretty definitively defeated the Whitebeard Pirates, that it was a relatively close fight, and I think the Marines personally have gotten weaker since Marineford. I think the fact that they lost Aokiji and Sengoku is huge, even though they gained Fujitora and Green Bull. I also think that them not having the seven warlords anymore is a big, big loss for them. So I,
Well, so
yeah, in my
you considered the seven warlords as part of the Marines, because to be fair, I consider them as a separate presence, right? Like that
You,
they were
yeah.
pirates who just happened to be their own faction, more
Yeah.
so
I
than the
get.
Marines themselves. Well, I'm curious how you would consider the Seraphim as part of this in
Yeah.
that case.
So I guess the reason why I lumped them in with the Marines is because they fought with the Marines at Marine Ford, and that's how I was using Marine Ford to scale the strength of the Marines. You're right in that I probably should lump the Seraphim and the warlords in with the world government rather than the Marines. But regardless, like, I guess my point is that at Marine Ford, they had a somewhat challenging time defeating the Whitebeard Pirates with an old dying Whitebeard.
Right.
And they've lost significant pieces that they had in that war. So
I
I
mean, and
don't,
listen,
yeah, I don't think
the
that they
old dying Whitebeard was not old dying Chin Zhao, okay?
do.
And even though my crew was still stronger than yours, even though I took Chin Zhao with the last pick because I knew that we were so decisively able to murk you. Let's not pretend like having trouble taking down Whitebeard is something, even at that age, that just about anyone in the world, except maybe Shanks and or Kaido would and or Big Mom would have had trouble doing. Everyone would have had trouble with that, I think.
For sure, but I think like someone like current day Shanks is stronger than old retired Whitebeard. You know what I mean?
Sure, I
Like,
think that's
so.
true. I think that's true.
Yeah, so that's why I have the Marines at five. And then at four, I put the Straw Hats. This one was tight because I thought about putting them up at three, but I ended up keeping them at four. To me, okay, so the comparison between four and three, I'll just be honest, was between the Blackbeard Pirates and the Straw Hat Pirates. And the reason why I put the Blackbeard Pirates above them is because I think Aokiji as a number two, even though I don't expect him to be a permanent member of the Blackbeard Pirates,
Right.
is just that much of a game-changing force. So, the Straw Hats, I think, obviously have a much better Grand Fleet, right? They've got really powerful kingdoms like Wano that they're allied with. So there is, in my opinion, an argument for the Straw Hats over the Blackbeard Pirates. But I think in terms of top tier fighters, I think Blackbeard and Luffy are probably pretty close right now. I think, even though honestly, I probably would give the Luffy the edge over Blackbeard right now. And
Oh,
then
come on, bro.
I
Oh,
think
come
so.
on. Nah, man. Bro, if Luffy had the edge over Blackbeard right now, what are we
Yeah.
even doing?
Well, I think the Blackbeard Pirates are actively getting much stronger and growing. Like the I don't think where they are right now is going to be close to where they are when they fight the Straw Hat Pirates. I think
But
both of these
Blackbeard has
groups.
always been ahead of Luffy. He's on a
Yeah.
parallel kind of journey, but he's been a couple steps ahead. He's been looking around saying it's not your time yet, Straw Hat. He was an emperor for longer. And he also, we know, is the person who gave Shanks the scar that still aches.
Yeah.
I
We
think we don't
don't know the
understand.
context of that, but yeah.
I think we don't understand the depth of his powers. And if you look at the people who are also part of his crew, like Shiryu, I mean,
Yeah.
you have level six impel down people. The place that Ace and Jinbei would be in held, who are just like regularly a part of his crew, in addition to people
Sure.
like Shiryu, in
Yeah.
addition to the people who are part of his OG crew, like Van Auger, Apple, Horse Apple Guy, and
Oh, cute.
Justice Burgess,
Yeah,
J Jesus
Jesus
Burgess.
Burgess. Yeah.
Thank you. Jesus Burgess.
He
Bro, it's like naturally, I bet you.
does have a luchador
I
mask.
bet you it's Jesus, bro. I'll look that up. Just like it's Diace Barrels. Or just like it's a Diace Drake, not X Drake.
Okay.
That's actually true. Do you know that? I'm not making that up.
I think I remember you saying something like that.
Yeah. But I think that the strength of that crew is still currently ahead of the Straw Hats, certainly in terms of depth.
Yeah.
And I think Blackbeard has to still be stronger than Luffy at this point.
Yeah,
But
no,
You made
I'm
the
not gonna
right
fight.
decision. You made the
Yeah.
right decision, but
Yeah.
I'm a little mad you thought about
I mean, I
it.
personally, maybe I'm underrating Blackbeard. I think the reason why I would put Luffy ahead of him right now is because I have a hard time seeing Blackbeard 1v1 Kaido. Maybe that's wrong, but I just Blackbeard and Luffy are very different people. Blackbeard would never take the risk of going to Wano and fighting Kaido the way Luffy did, right? But
Right,
the
also
reason
true.
why, yeah. So at the end of the day, I have a hard time seeing Blackbeard 1v1 Kaido, which is why in my head, Luffy is a little bit stronger than him right now.
But he
I
sure
will
has
acknowledge you're right. There's a lot that we haven't seen him do, and there's probably a lot that he's hiding from us right
he
now.
sure murked Law faster than Kaido and Big Mom would seem to be able to on there. I mean, obviously it
I
was a
mean, that wasn't just
1v1.
him. That was
It was
him
a
and like four or
1v1. It
five
was a
of his crew.
1v1, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I have Straw Hats at four, Blackbeard Pirates at three, Red Haired Pirates at two. And for the Red Haired Pirates, it's also a lot of speculation because we haven't seen them do a whole lot. Obviously, Shanks, low diff, or no diff kid and killer, which was huge. We've heard a lot of Beckman and Yasop and Lucky and all of these people without having seen them accomplish all that much. But I think I can't remember the quote that we got post Wano where it was like, the levels of their highest commander of their commanders is like the highest amongst the Yonko crew. Like we said, they've been their role in the story has been delayed to this point, which hypes them up even further to me. I feel pretty comfortable putting them at number two, even though their fleet is extraordinarily weak. The other thing that I'll say I factored in is that they're allied with Elbaf, and Elbaf is like canonically the strongest country in the world. They're literally a country of giants. So I think that's points in the red-haired pirate's favor as well. So that's why I put them at two.
And that leaves for number one. I have no objections to Shanks being way up there.
And number one is the world government. So this is where I feel like some people like Josh, our friend Josh, most strongly disagreed with me, because people are much lower on the Gorosei as a force than I think I am. Like, all we've seen, it's true that all we've really seen to them at this point is that they are like extreme damage tanks, right? That they just take up hits and get back up like nothing's bothered them. But I can't get it out of my head that when Luffy was fighting Mars, the only solution that he could come up with to actually win that fight was to literally just throw him away and be like, let's leave while he's gone. Because he had, like, for all of the strength that Luffy has at this moment, he is not like Gear Fifth, Advanced Conquerors. He cannot put a single one of these Gorosei actually out. Like, he can't take them out. And I think that that is extremely meaningful. Obviously, we haven't seen Imu. I expect Imu to be the strongest character in the series, you know, until Luffy defeats him. And then there's also the Seraphim, like we were saying, that they have the God's Knights that we haven't seen yet. I think that the world government actually has a lot going for them, and that they're pretty comfortably the number one force.
Originally, I was a little bit more on board with that, but what I think really interested me is it's true that Fegarlan Garling and the God's Knights seem to be particularly strong. What I see with the elders, I'm not all the way on Josh's side of saying I think they're just like damage tanks and not incredibly strong, although I do eventually like his ranking. For me, it's feeling like the entire power of the world government is not just those things, but really the fact that the Marines will be allied against them or allied with them. And so when you have everyone who's fighting for the world government and you're dealing with the Seraphim and you're dealing with, potentially God's Knights and you're dealing with Imu and the Elder Stars. And on top of that, the people that are fighting with them are the Marines, which give them this like massive power as well as like a few other kind of S tier, at the very least A tier people. That's what puts their force all the way up in the number one.
So you think without the Marines that they wouldn't be that high for you?
It certainly feels more overpowered, although they do have to be super strong. I like the idea of Blackbeard, who I think is shaping up to be the main antagonist of the series, and the way he is actually accumulating his crew with all these devil fruits. He's been an emperor for a while. I like the idea of him and Shanks as pirates who have these massive crews and this massive military force actually being stronger than actually being stronger than the world government itself, especially when we see the power of Haki, which seems to be one of the main things that the Elder Stars have going for them. A character like Shanks, who seems to have like absolute mastery over it, or Blackbeard, who seems to have some kind of like nullification power or like something where certain things that we don't quite understand are just not going to work on him. I like the idea of those two forces potentially being stronger than the world government on its own. Even once again, that giant rope, who when Kuma attacked Marineford or when Kuma attacked Marajoa, it's like we had to see the Marines show up to actually help. And okay, they couldn't get rid of them because they couldn't use their full force because they had to protect people, whatever. But I think it's really the combination of those two that makes them the great threat that they are, just like we saw at Marineford, where I don't know that, like I don't know that the world government on its own could have taken down Whitebeard's fleet in
Oh,
that way.
I strongly disagree with that. Strongly. I think that, oh, so there's a couple of things that I want to ask you. One, the reason The reason why I lumped the Marines and the world government as separate entities for this list, well, I mean, it was because Morge did, but it's also because
Oh,
I
you did it because
actually,
Morge did.
it was. I mean, it was his list originally, right? So,
Man, this guy to do a thing because Morge did, man.
you know what? It
I'm
was his list, and I pulled it from. But also, like
just
we've
being
talked about
dumb.
before, I don't expect the Marines to be on the world government side once it's revealed that they're planning on just committing mass genocide, right? Like I strongly think it's implied that the Marines will fight as an independent force, not allied with any individual pirate crew, but just yeah, just some they will be their own entity that is going to fight for quote unquote justice, whatever that is, right? I don't think
Including
they will.
Akainu.
I including Akainu. I do include Akainu in that.
Wait, hold on, man. How you gonna be? You've been telling me for ages this change of heart that I've been saying Akainu could have,
I
and
don't
that he
think
could
it's
be
a
in Javert. You're, but you just said that
yeah.
he might be, he'll be fighting on the
No,
side of
but
justice.
right. I don't think that's a change of heart though, right? So here's how I'll put it. Like Akainu, I don't think without a lot of character development, and we're going to get off on a maybe a little bit of a tangent here. I don't think Akainu is going to look at what the world government is doing and be like, oh, let me ally myself with the Straw Hat crew because the Straw Hat crew is a force for good. Like, regardless of what is going on in the future, I think that he is always his mentality is always going to be that pirates are evil and that he will non-discriminately, you know, deal out justice. And maybe that is the reason. Maybe Akainu won't you know separate himself from them. I don't know. Now that I'm talking about this, maybe I you're starting to convince me that maybe the Marines won't defect because Akainu is their leader. But I
No.
guess my point with Akainu is that there's no world in which I can see him ever acknowledging Luffy as a good person or allying himself with Luffy in any way.
That's it. So you must be backing off from suggesting that the Marines are going to defect, including Akainu, because in that way, if they end up fighting in the side of justice, they would be doing it. Like, what I would suggest is that he's going to not necessarily like choose side justice isn't important, but that he's going to learn a new, he's going to have his ideal of justice, and what that is going to shift a la Javert. And
Sure,
that would allow for the thing that you just suggested to happen to actually happen.
I could see that. I'll give you that. That I could see actually being written in into the story. I have to think. I didn't expect really to talk that much about Akainu today. I'd have to think about. I'd have to think about his character a lot and about how much growth I can really expect from him between now and the end of the story, because obviously the man that we saw on O'Hara was perfectly fine with indiscriminate genocide, right? Like that's
Right.
literally what he did. They had a boat full of scholars that were supposed to be innocent, and he was just like, "Fuck it. If one archaeologist made it onto that boat,
Right.
then it justifies killing all of these innocent lives, right?" So that person obviously would not defect from the world government. Yeah, I don't have a good answer to that yet. Maybe next week, if you ask me again, I'll give you an answer.
We'll figure it out. Well,
Yeah.
I think your rankings are all right. I might have the I might have Shanks and Blackbeard a little bit higher, and the world government and Marines. Well, the Marines maybe the same place, but the world government a little bit lower, understanding that they're gonna combine with the Marines. I think probably I'd have the Revolutionary Army a few spots up. I like the idea of the Straw Hats still being on the lower end of it, just because I think we still have potential for growth. I think that like after our first few, we'd have like maybe four pretty strong guys, but that's still not as many as someone like a Blackbeard. And what Shanks seemed to be able to do is still much stronger than anything we've seen from any of the other emperors. But I think, yeah, we're on our way, and that's what we have. I know Mord said the series might be like 8 more years, which doesn't seem crazy at all to me. There's someone who actually bet me $10. She thought it was gonna end in like 1 year in 2025. I was like, girl, you crazy. You might as
What?
well give me that. You might as well give me that.
What?
You might as well just give me that money right now.
When did she make this bet? How long ago?
Like less than 2 months.
Oh my God. What?
Right. It's like you
That's
might as well just
insane.
give me that money right now. Like,
That's
please. So should we make
actually
some
crazy.
predictions for what's going on in the next week, Abraham?
Yeah. You want me to go first?
I would love for you to go first.
Okay. So my prediction is that we are going to see Saturn fall into the ocean after taking those punches from Luffy and Bonnie this chapter, and that he is going to be unaffected by it. Like, he's not a hammer, and it'll essentially be like confirmation that the Gorosei do not have devil fruit powers.
I think that that's interesting and possible. Although I think, while I agree they don't have devil fruit powers, I do think that they're still going to have a weakness for the ocean. But as you know, I've been saying that I think Saturn, I believe in our last episode, I said I think Saturn's going to get worked. And that we
He
might get
did.
some kind of, yeah, he did. And we might get some kind of interesting, we might get some kind of interesting reaction to what him falling into the ocean getting defeated looks like. So I'm just gonna keep being a broken record. I have two things I kept saying. It's the robot's gonna do something crazy, Saturn's gonna get defeated. That's what I'm gonna say. Robot's gonna do something crazy, Saturn's gonna get defeated.
Okay, we'll see. I'm on board with it.
Look at that, man. Look at that. You see that, man? We're bringing me and Abraham together, listeners.
Yeah.
We're bringing me and Abraham together. That means that these things are definitely going to happen, or at the very least, the things that we're close on. So now we're on a break week, which means that instead of talking about the chapter, it's time to talk about some theories. It's time for S Class and F Class, where we find theories and rate them on the internet so you don't have to. Our first theory is the Shanks's twin in Reverie arc from Sword Piece on YouTube. This theory suggests that during the Reverie arc, a man who appears to be Shanks addresses the Elder Stars. According to the YouTuber Sword Piece, this is unlikely to be the red-haired pirate, as the scene, the character in the scene uses formal language, which is dissimilar to Shanks, who addresses Whitebeard and even Sengoku informally. It is also unlikely that Shanks will be welcome on Marajor, as other characters like the Don Quixote family were stripped of their world noble status after leaving the Red Line. There's been buzz about a possible Shanks twin recently. Abraham, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I actually watched, I think, a different video where someone also pointed out that there was like some kind of mark on Shanks's face that's usually there, that's not there in that silhouette and like the scene in Marajoa's. I personally, so I think it's a possibility, but I do not think that it was Shanks's twin that was talking to the Gorosei in Marajoa's. I think that would be. It would be kind of, it would feel a little manipulative to me to be like, to show us someone and be like, oh, Shanks is doing all this and blah, 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 blah. And then we find out that it wasn't Shanks all along. So I don't know. I actually really, while I can see this whole idea about Shanks having a twin, especially with the silhouette that we got at the end of this last chapter that looked so similar to Shanks, I kind of don't want that to be the answer. You know what I mean? I'd actually prefer it if Shanks snuck into the Marajoa's and had a private audience with the Gorosei himself. But what about you? What do
Bro, this is obviously an F-class theory.
you
This is a fail theory. Just like you
Why?
said, it would be incredibly manipulative to have this entire plot line and then just suggest that there's a second Shanks. Now, if you
Yeah.
can go back and suggest to me that there is some sort of hint that this is a thing, that at that point in the story, we had any kind of point of reference for the idea that Shanks could have a twin or a brother or anything like that, it would feel completely out of nowhere. It would feel ridiculous. It would feel contrived. And it would
Yeah.
not be a fun reveal. It would be the kind of reveal that makes the entire fan base angry. One of the things, as you know, that I think about when I rate a theory is how interesting would that theory be if it was true? And this theory would make me want to burn my eyes out if I read this
Oh
in the pages.
my God.
Even just the formal language is
Yeah.
dissimilar to Shanks speaking to Whitebeard, who is a pirate, and Sengoku, who is a marine person. He seems clear that he has a different relationship with these characters. And in addition to that, we know he actually has lineage of being from Marajoa. Now, obviously, you have the example of Doflamingo, who you brought up in the Don Quixote family. Shanks does still seem to have a more interesting relationship, as he's related to one of the actual like highest noble families, who's like the arbiter of justice in there for Garland Garland. I don't know exactly what that means, but the idea that there is just going to be this magic twin that pops up out of nowhere 1,000 chapters into the series is ridiculous. I do not like it. This is an F-class theory.
You know, I have just a quick tangent. I have my buddy Evan that I introduced you to is
Right.
convinced that Shanks is evil. He's like, he's told me for the longest time, he's just like, Shanks is the ops, I promise you, he's evil, and I'm gonna die on that hill.
I can't even hate on Evil Shanks' theory. I can hate on him suggesting that Usopp is the MVP of the second half of the series, but I
I
can't
mean,
hate.
that's just an intelligent young
All
man.
right,
That
listen, the whole second
that
half of
guy's
the
about to get
series,
his
man,
doctorate.
you
You
can
gotta
make me
address
like,
him
you
as
already
Dr.
made me
Purdue.
take off my glasses, man. I can You made me take off my glasses, suggesting that's an intelligent
Has you have you
take.
has anyone ever called you Dr. Man before?
No, that's my dad.
The next time you see Evan, you address him as Dr. Purdue.
Man,
And then say that his take is stupid.
I won't. I don't know if I'll tell him his take is stupid. I'm gonna say he has a dumb name, though. Dr. Purdue, like, what, you
Who's
attorney?
wrong with that last name? What?
Is this Thanksgiving?
What? What does
Man.
Thanksgiving have to do with anything?
Bro, that's a turkey brand that you get a
Oh.
lot of different turkeys. Purdue,
I
it's
didn't. I
spelled
had no idea.
Purdue. So
Okay.
it might be Thanksgiving. But Abraham, what is the next theory?
Okay. So this is one that I watched on Sawyer Seven Mages' YouTube channel, and he points out that during one of the hiatuses in 2022, Oda released a booklet series known as The Road to Laugh Tale. In which he revealed that the fourth road poneglyph would be found at one of three islands, Elbaf, Hachinosu Island, or Blackbeard's base, or Vira. And in his video, Sawyer Seven Mage argues that the most logical location for the final poneglyph is on the island of Vira, which is a small war-torn island that was originally mentioned back in East Blue by Nami, but it hasn't come up since then. Sawyer claims that Hachinosu would not make sense as a destination for this poneglyph because it would mean that Blackbeard already has copies of all four stones and there would be nothing stopping him from sailing to Laugh Tale. And Sawyer also uses an interview given by Oda for Jump Festa, I think last year, to suggest that Oda considered skipping the Arc of Elbaf entirely at some point, and thus it is unlikely that such an important key to the conclusion of the story will be contained within this arc. So, what do you think about the fourth road poneglyph being on the island of Vira?
Well, I'll say that I like the idea of it being at one of these three islands in the first place, because there are a few places that we have not visited at any point that have been mentioned. And I guess that that's confirmed from Oda. So at the very
Yeah,
least,
Oda pretty much straight up says that.
it's narratively exciting to me. The thing about Vera, it's funny because whenever I think it's in Arlong's arc or before that, maybe it's she's reading the newspaper at some point, and I remember, I wish I could remember exactly when it was, but I've always, when I've gone back and reread that
It's
piece,
before
been
Log
like,
Town, right before Log Town.
right, okay, yeah. It's whenever I've gone back and read that piece, I'm like, interesting. Like there's this like war going on in this place. It's what's difficult is trying to like rate the courage of this theory because it feels like you're guessing out of a 33% rate. You're basically just suggesting that one of these three places that we know it's going to be in is going to have it. And I don't find the reasoning for skipping Elbaf or that it wouldn't be in Hachinosu to be particularly creative. I think the idea that he was like, oh, we might skip Elbaf. Man, we were never going to skip Elbaf. We were going to Elbaf. We were going to see the giants. Like Dorian Braggy just came and rescued the crew at Egghead. We were going to go to Elbaf. Maybe we get intercepted on the way out. I don't know. I think we were going to go to Elbaf no matter what. We're going to show up. Not going to be a Davy backfight there, but there, there's some stuff is going to happen there that, other than a Davy backfight. Hachinosu, I think the logic makes sense, but it's just kind of obvious that why would Blackbeard just be sitting around not going to Laugh-Tale? Maybe we find something else be out beyond that. And so I like the idea that it could be on Vera, this island that has just been mentioned many, many, many moons ago. I think it's the sort of thing that you might be able to actually build a kind of paper trail for if you continue reading the series, saying, oh, actually, once we know it's at Vera, we might be able to say, oh, now that I read Thriller Bark, I see something else that points to Vera. Now that I read whatever, I see something else that points to Vera in the same way that you might have. In the same way that you can do with like Nika, even though we didn't even think about that at that time. But I just don't think the logic is strong enough or creative enough for how weak the prediction is, just being like I chose one of these three things. So this can't be an S-class theory for me
Bro,
either. We only have two options. It's an F-class theory.
it's clearly an F class theory. I thought this was it was so I mean you hit what I was going to say, which is the big thing is that it's ridiculous to suggest that we would ever skip Elbaf. Elbaf has been mentioned since all the way back in Little Garden. It's gonna I know you like to throw your shade at Usopp, but I think that the arc is gonna be integral to his character and character development. It's just there's never any world where we were ever want to skip that arc. So you can take some interview, and Oda didn't even mention Elbaf in that interview. He was just saying he was suggesting that maybe there was an island that he wanted to skip after Elbaf, after Egghead. And then Sawyer was like, oh well, Elbaf is coming after Egghead, so maybe Oda was thinking about skipping Elbaf. I think
And I'm pretty sure he
that's
didn't
actually.
even suggest that they were going to skip. I'm pretty sure in my memory, he was basically just like, will we go there? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. The Hachinosu stuff, I agree with him in that I don't see there's I don't see how the Poneglyph would be there. The other reason why I don't see it being on Hachinosu is because the location of the thing is quote unquote unknown, right? And there's just so many pirate crews that have been on Hachinosu all of this time. Blackbeard's only taken control over the territory relatively recently, so I feel like if it was on Hachinosu, that the location would not be quote unquote lost, right? So to me, it's just very clearly on Elbaf. This is Shanks. I think we both expect that this is going to be the arc where we encounter Shanks, and I think Shanks has been clearly acting as the final gatekeeper for who is going to be able to find the One Piece and get to Laugh-Tale, right? This whole idea that he was not he was intentionally avoiding seeing Luffy until he was truly a great pirate, and now he can finally acknowledge Luffy as a great pirate, and regardless of whether or not there's going to be a Davy back fight, which there will be to
There will
kind of
not
test
be.
the mettle of the Straw Hat Pirates, I think the conclusion is that this is basically going to be the final stepping stone for the Straw Hats in order to get to Laugh-Tale, that Shanks will like Shanks is that quote unquote final boss, even though he's not the final boss of the series. So I think it's pretty pretty clearly an F class theory. Yeah.
You know
He
something?
tried his best.
If you know how like Skip Bayless got just like enough credibility that like lasted him his whole rest of his career until right now, when LeBron choked in the Heat finals, in the first Heat finals, like that's gonna be Mr. Morge if it turns out that there's a Davey back fight on LBAF.
Bro, he's actually, I feel like it's been the opposite. I feel like he's actually been gotten more things accurately predicted than any other YouTuber out there. But the raid will end in failure stuff, people. It like that is all people will talk about and be like, oh, but he thought this, so all of the
It
other
was
stuff that
such
he
a
predicted
major
correctly
take.
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, oh yeah, he predicted Advanced Conquerors hockey, doesn't matter. He predicted the Egghead Island incident, it doesn't matter because he said the raid would fail. I feel like it's actually the opposite. That's what's been happening too.
I'm sure Skip has some things he can point to where he predicted them right too. I'm just saying. Interesting fact about Vera, though, Mont Blanc Noland arrived there and departed from there on June 21st, 1122. So that's an interesting piece too, to have a look up on the wiki. You know, when we get dates in One Piece, it tends to be pretty significant. It'll be interesting. You know, I gotta go watch a YouTuber to help me out in the wordplay with that. But but I think definitely we, you know, when we get dates for things, that's kind of rare and tends to be sort of like something that could indicate something interesting that happened later in the series. So I like the idea that's going to be on Vera, but I agree with you. This is an F class theory.
Okay. We're gonna move on to the next segment.
I think we should move on. It's time to continue with our harem draft.
Okay.
It's the harem draft. Oh,
You know, you got it. You got it. You
okay.
got it.
Where Abraham and I are going to craft the ideal group of five male pirates to appeal sexually to our two judges, Eric and Katie, who were on with us the last time. We've currently drafted three out of five pirates for the harems. My crew, the best crew, has Zoro, Law, and Ace. And Abraham, who's on your crew?
My crew has Ben Beckman, Rayleigh, and Senior Pink.
So I believe that it is your turn to draft first this
It
round.
is. It is. It is. And I've known who I was going to take for a while. It's going to be King. I'll take King. Easy pick.
What? Oh, King, bro. I thought you said Queen for a second.
No, I said King.
Bro. No, bro, I just like when you said King, I was imagining Queen and I was like, oh my God, dude, are you serious? Like I know Eric said he likes fat guys.
I just gotta lean into
Oh
it.
my God. That would have been the
No.
craziest thing I ever
No.
heard.
I need some melanin on my team.
Tell me what you're thinking about, man. Tell me what you're
I
thinking
mean,
about.
he's a beautiful man, first of all, first and foremost, right? And he's also, like I said, I need some melanin on my team. He's just like a beautiful brown-skinned, white-haired man, attractive dude, tall. I don't know what else to say. He's just a conventionally, I was told by Katie that I need more conventionally attractive men on my in my harem, so I feel like King is a great place to go with that.
You know, I'm not gonna lie to you. I agree. King is a beautiful man. He's got very nice hair. But man, look at this mask he's walking around with, man. Bro,
Bro, he's not wearing the mask in the harem.
like what? Like we have
Unless
no sense of personality.
you got some S&M. If you have an S&M kit, King, he could put the mask on for you, but the mask can come on or off.
We're gonna need someone to get that kink when we're judging the women's harem, maybe done by our friends. I don't know. We just don't have any personality. We talked about, you know, one thing you had going for you was
Bro.
emotional intelligence, and King is basically just a solid dude who has some kind of dark past. Like we don't even know anything
Yeah,
about him.
he's been through something. He's been through genocide. You know, he's probably like a Keanu Reeves kind of dude, where he's just like dark and solemn. Like sometimes that's an attractive feature in a man.
Listen, man, I don't know. I never heard someone say genocide is a panty dropper. That I never heard
is not
from
what I said. That is not what I said in the slightest.
Abraham Ogbalase. Genocide is a panty dropper. The first one to say that on that this call. Not something I said first and attributed to him. Okay, you know, I was told that I need a little bit of emotional intelligence, and you know how I've been balancing. Eric was at my house this weekend, and we were hanging out. I said, "You know something, Eric? I know you like fat." I said, "No, I'm only gonna have beautiful men. Like I'm just not. Listen, I'm not going out here. My whole crew gonna have six packs." And the character I would like to bring, you know, I think we have been thinking about whether to go all rounder or go all in with the bad boys. And I think I'm going to go all rounder to get myself a little bit of a little bit of that emotional intelligence. You're
Okay.
smiling like you probably know who I'm going to take.
I don't.
The character with the most emotional intelligence in the story. The character who can relate, who can almost even feel the feelings of everyone. The character who came up as a nice boy, a nice little cabin boy on Alvida's ship, and turned into a strong, powerful man who wears glasses on his head. Kobe.
Kobe. Okay. I mean, I like Kobe. I'll give you that he was unintentionally a pirate at some point. So you know what? I'll give you that.
Oh man, we do only pirates again.
It's okay. It's okay. That was the rule that Alex kind of implemented with us when we first started it, you remember? But we were both like, oh man, that's kind of a dumb rule. We shouldn't have put that in there. So I don't really care if you want to take Colby.
Work. Cause it's a harem, right? Like we're building a harem. It's like it's gotta be beautiful. You know, and I think
I'm just
Kobe
going
is
to put
someone who's
Alvida
had a
Pirates.
he's had a real glow up. He's had a real glow up.
He did. He did. I mean, look, Colby is an emotionally intelligent man. That's true. I don't know. He's kind of a whiner though. Like
Bro, what?
he's just whining about stuff all the time.
Bro, did you see him protect Vivi from that missile, bro?
Vivi, did he? He protected Vivi from a missile?
From an underwater missile, bro? Well, that was Vivi, right? Was that someone else?
Wait, you're talking about it like in the Reverie or something like that?
It's in like chapter like 900 or something.
I don't remember, but you know what? Sure, we could say he
He
did.
definitely protects someone, a princess, from an underwater missile, and he's very strong. And you know, and then we saw what he did in Hachinosu. You know, bang. You know, like with that whole. You know, he's out here punching the ship a million times. You know, he destroyed that thing. I think I'm gonna add some emotional intelligence, go with an all rounder.
Okay.
And because it's a snake draft, that means I have the next one.
You do.
You know, Abraham, I can't just be normal. You know, I had to go and add Chin Zhao at the end. I gotta add someone fun. Now I'm still keeping with some emotional intelligence,
Okay.
but there's definitely some characters that people don't normally look at as the most beautiful in the whole series, but who certainly have a kind of appeal to them. We have some bad boys, but I kind of want to take it a little bit further to some characters with some real emo vibes.
I'm
Maybe a little
wondering
bit
who you're
of.
going with. Is this
You
like
see?
Bartolomeo or something like that?
No, I'm not going Bartolomeo. That's he ugly. I'm talking about someone with more emotional intelligence, a little more gravity to them, someone that would look out for a friend, a child even, and take care of them, take them to hospitals all around the world to try and get them healed. We're going with Corazon.
Oh wow. Okay. That's playing to the emotions more than anything, because Corazon is not a beautiful man.
Hey, listen, there's some people who like to get, you know, there's some people who are into the emo vibes. And all I'm saying is I think that when you get the emotions with some of those bad boy emo vibes, I just want to choose someone a little different. You know, like it's true. My crew is very conventionally attractive. And Corazon's kind of conventionally attractive, but with a little bit of like a crazy side to him.
So
Like,
here's the other thing I'm gonna bring up is that I did already take Senor Ping. So you double dipping from the same crew that I already took. I'm fine with it, but I might double dip from another crew if that's what we're doing now.
I would welcome you to double dip from another crew. Listen, I want to be clear that when we first did this, I was like, I encourage you to go back and double dip from the crew
Yeah.
because I felt like that was who you would have picked otherwise. And I don't like that rule either.
Yeah.
It's
Okay.
a men's harem, and we're trying to create the most beautiful characters, the most, the most irresistible groups of men in the One Piece universe. So I also encourage you to do that. Even though I've been ignoring the rules first, I welcome you to take the character that we all believe you would have taken,
Okay.
had that rule not accidentally been in place.
So since I can double dip on a pirate crew, I guess I'll take Queen.
Shut up,
I'm
man.
from this fight. I'll take Shanks. I'll take Shanks.
Don't do that,
I did consider taking Jinbei. If I was gonna double
Eric,
down him.
because Eric
I
loves
would never
Jinbei.
lose Eric if
Right.
I
Actually,
did.
honestly, it would have been kind of funny if your crew was like Senior Pink, Jinbei, Queen.
Queen.
We.
Yeah, maybe I should have taken Queen and Jinbei to close the draft.
Okay. Maybe the next draft after we get our friends Katie and Eric to do a women's harem for us, maybe we do a sumo draft.
A sumo draft?
Yeah. Like we
Okay.
taking Queen, Big Mom, Jinbei.
I got you. Yeah, I'd be down. We'll figure it out. But that's the five. So I'll give you a rundown of both crews. Jordan's harem has Zoro, Law, Ace, Kobe, and Corazon. And my harem has Ben Beckman, Rayleigh, Senior Pink, King, and Shanks. So you guys can let us know. You guys can let us know which harem that you're going to choose to spend your quality time with. And we'll have Katie and Eric on next week to tell us how we did and see if we were able to sway either of them over to our side.
And to be clear, the average age of Abraham's crew is like 60 years old. I
Yeah,
think the youngest person in this crew, 47.
that's how we get down over here.
Let me just call, it's funny, man. I can't even make jokes about this, man. Yeah, I
You the worst person to make game
can't
role. That this
even, like, I
we I
want
built this harem for people like you.
to. I know, man. I want to be like, oh, let me call my mom, and I'm gonna be like, no, like I'm the person who would be going for that with the women's crew. So what can I say? Let us know what you think in the harem. Can't wait to have our judges on next week to have another fun time with that. I think it's time to dive into the culture and personal segments, though.
Yeah.
Abraham, you brought the first topic today. Would you like to you want to introduce it for us?
Yeah. So, President Joe Biden announced last Sunday that he will end his presidential re-election campaign, bringing an abrupt conclusion to his half-century-long political career and scrambling the race for the White House less than 4 months before Election Day. Biden, who's 81, could not reverse growing sentiment within his party that he was too frail to serve and destined to lose to Donald Trump in November. And so he backed Vice President Kamala Harris to replace him as the Democratic nominee. So I guess my question to you, Jordan, is does Joe Biden dropping out of the race make you more or less confident in the ability of the Democrats to win this election and defeat Donald Trump?
I mean, the answer to that is obviously yes. Joe Biden, especially after that debate, it seemed he looked infirm. And I think what's so difficult about it is the number of people who it's not like it's a condition that is irrecognizable. So, like, if FDR has polio or whatever, you might not just like know what that looks like. We
Okay.
all, many of us have had a grandparent, an uncle, an aunt, a friend, a family member who has gone through getting older, and you've seen them slow down. And what's so tough about watching it is it's obvious to anyone that this is the best version of who we're going to have. And in 4 years, he's not going to even be this, was not even going to be the same person. And I think that the visceral reaction to that is obvious, and it's obvious how that was going to have negative consequences for our, it was how that was going to have negative consequences for his reelection campaign. What I think is disappointing is I feel like the Democrats have kind of screwed the pooch on having some kind of exciting democratic process by which we would actually nominate we would actually like vote on the nominee. I don't want to hear any of this like, oh, it's impossible, whatever. I cannot imagine there's no
Wait,
way they could
you
have.
wanted there to be like a the next representative to be like an elected, like in a primary?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily even like, yes, essentially, right? Like some kind of vote or recommendation where the delegates would actually go based on that. You have a bunch of people who feel like they don't trust the Democratic Party in part because they were hiding this whole infirm thing that clearly everyone would have known and they could have told us, and they could have had an actual open primary and a presidential and a Democratic Party debate that would have actually revealed some of these weaknesses to us. And given other people the opportunity to run, but especially in an election where democracy really is at stake, particularly from the attack on democracy coming from the right, I think it would have been really, I think it's both important for demonstrating democratic values that we would have people vote on who their candidate was going to be. And I think it would have helped us really choose the person that the party is the most excited about, which is the person that you actually do want running.
So I think a couple of things, right? I agree that a lot of the Democrat leadership swept these issues under the rug and didn't take them as seriously as maybe the public did, and that all came to a head at the debate where Joe Biden obviously had a really poor performance. Now, I don't know, if that is, how he typically is every single day versus if that was just him having like a bad evening or something like that. But regardless, that those are very real concerns that the voting the like that that the rest of the country had, and the party did not take seriously until it was too late. So I don't think they really had the option of having a formal election process to select the next leader of the party in the time that they had before the election. If this, I agree, if they had done this earlier and actually held legitimate primaries and done all of that, that probably would have been the better way to go about doing this. But I think the in terms of how to respond from the debate, having a bunch of different candidates try and put their name forward and assume leadership of the party and lead to like a bunch of infighting and what I feel like that in and of itself would not have actually led to like a productive response. You know what I mean? Especially with as little time as we have before the election, you kind of want, in my opinion, to have one candidate out there, one message that they're delivering, right? Kamala Harris is not who I personally would probably. I mean, I don't obviously have a vote. I'm not American. She's not who my ideal candidate would be. But, like, in terms of if it's her versus someone like Trump, then, I think she has a better chance of winning than another candidate that might get elected like a year from now, not a month from now in like a primary election. So I guess my point is with the time limit that they imposed on themselves, I think that was the best response.
I would say that I think they could have, like, it wouldn't have to be the same official type thing, but they could at the very least have a debate and have some kind of vote that maybe is not the official vote or whatever, but then the delegates will have the option of like The delegates will have the option of going with the person that got however many votes or not, but like ideally they would because of the way the primary system works. But all you actually need is people to go vote somewhere and to count it. And I think that's something that we would have been able to find a way to do. What's frustrating is like, again, like it, you're right. Maybe you can make the argument that just given this circumstance, fine, this is the only option they had. But it's still a quandary of their own creation. And I think that what kills me is if she loses, I know we had an argument about this with Alex. If she loses, we're going to end up sitting here having some kind of conversation about, oh, black people didn't vote high enough. Well, or black men voted for Trump, or like whatever this, whatever that. These people didn't come out and vote. And the reality is there are a lot of people who would have been excited, blood for our party. Wes Moore in Maryland is awesome when you hear him speak. J.B. Pritzker in Chicago. There's some guy in Kentucky. Like there are all these people who are really exciting, really compelling. Gretchen Whitmer, obviously, in Michigan. I mean, just even like imagine a Gretchen Whitmer, Josh Shapiro ticket with governors from Michigan and Pennsylvania, two of the states that you actually need to win, who are both very popular. Instead of it being Kamala, who's associated with a hugely unpopular White House, it just seems like there should have been some kind of better process. And it's frustrating that we're going to end up, if we lose, just like blaming people who didn't vote instead of this really poor party structure.
Sure. I mean, I agree with that. I also did hear one issue with doing what you're saying is that, yeah, there are all these great, may potentially viable candidates, but without having gone through this whole formal process of a primary, right? You don't necessarily know who's going to be like a charismatic speaker, who's going to be able to, get donations, like from, don't like maybe Biden's donors wouldn't want to support some like very left-wing candidate, right? So I think there were a lot of logistical issues that would have that probably made supporting Kamala the quote unquote correct decision at this point. But I don't disagree with you that this is a problem of their own creation because they didn't take the age issue seriously enough when people had been pointing it out to them months ago.
Couldn't agree with you more on that
All
part.
right.
According to The Guardian, the United States water polo's women's team will launch their bid for an unprecedented fourth straight Olympic gold medal on Saturday with an unlikely benefactor in their corner. Flavor Flav.
Flavor Flav.
The 65-year-old founding member of Public Enemy has stolen the show around town in his role as the team's official hype man. After team captain Maggie Steffens put a call on Instagram asking for financial help, Flav offered to back the team while leveraging his celebrity to bring attention to one of the most successful and overlooked teams on the Olympic scene. A few weeks later, Flav signed a sponsorship deal with the U.S. women's and men's team aimed to elevate the visibility and excitement surrounding water polo in the United States. In addition to an undisclosed financial contribution, Flav will make multiple appearances at USA Water Polo events to bring attention to a sport that has trouble drawing stateside attention, even during the Olympics. And I can tell you it's working because my sister is hitting me with DMs about Flavor Flav at water polo all
What
the
is she at? Is your sister a Flavor Flav fan?
Bro, we were all Flavor of Love fans when we grew up. Did you not watch that
No,
show?
I didn't. Not at all.
You know what that is, right?
I don't.
What? Oh
Yeah,
my God.
I've never seen it before, heard of it
Bro,
before.
it was the dating show with Flavor Flav as the main prize. And
What?
so, yeah, bro, it was the funniest thing. Like you had all these women like, trying to compete over this little grimy old man, first of all. And so he, instead of giving him roses, he would give him clocks because he always wears a clock around his neck. But it was one of the most amazing reality TV experiences that just gave so many ridiculous moments. One of the highlights being when Pumpkin spat at New York, as well as two of the three people who were left from the show. Pumpkin spit this blonde white girl, Pumpkin. spits on New York, who's the who she was the agitator, the one who's always, you know, getting everyone's
New York
business
is another
going.
woman.
Right. And so I was going to get to that because I wanted you to be surprised first. At the
Okay.
beginning of the show, they all come up and Flav is like, yo, your vibe is kind of like, I'm going to call you Hoops. I'm going to call you New York. I'm going to call you Buck Wild. I'm going to call you Pumpkin. I'm going to call you Toasty, Toastee. I'm going to call you Boots, Bootzi. Like he named Delicious, Delishis. And so he named the woman, you're talking about
I've
this woman.
never heard of this before.
Bro, I need to send you a flavor. You do you even know what flavor they
That's
look like?
crazy.
You know what he looks like?
I know what he looks like now.
Bro, check out this article I just sent you in the chat. Look at what Flavor Flav looks like. He's got the water polo hat on. He's got his blue glasses. Is that not the most
Bro,
hilarious thing you've ever seen?
how did this happen? Like, Flavor Flav and water polo?
It's
That's wild.
unbelievable, isn't it? It's unbelievable.
That's
I
crazy. I
might
also didn't
honestly.
know that Flav had it like that. Like, I feel like I haven't heard from him in 20 years. And this guy is, yeah. He's just got money to sponsor these Olympic athletes. Like, I feel like that's not cheap.
I feel like if you probably, well, one, like, I feel like it's probably not like, you know, that crazy of an amount of money. If you have, like, you know, if you have the kind of money from being part of Public Enemy for years, I feel like he's definitely got good money. Between that and having like reality, like rights to his old reality TV show, I feel like he's doing just fine for himself in terms of ongoing income. But, you know, it's also not the kind of thing that probably costs like a ridiculous amount of money to give, you know, this number of women a little bit of money to help them have some sustenance, right? Like,
That's crazy. You gave me 10,000 guesses as to who was sponsoring the water polo.
no,
I would never land on Flavor Flav.
you
You know what
never
this
would. You never
it
would.
reminds me of? It's
Who?
like on Chappelle's show. There's an episode on Chappelle's show when they're talking about, I think, the 9/11 attacks on the radio or something like that. And they're like, it's on the radio. And he's like, I'm listening to the radio. And they're like, next to talk about these acts of terrorism, we have singer and songwriter Ja Rule. And Dave is just like, what kind of expertise does Ja Rule have? I'm scared to death. I'm not trying to dance. It's like an iconic Chappelle Show episode. Where he goes, where is Ja? I never would have connected Flavor Flav with the women's water polo team. I also didn't know the women's water polo team had it like that. Four straight gold medals is kind of crazy.
Yeah, honestly. But man, I need you to go on these links I'm sending you. I'm sending you these Flavor of Love girls, and they still on Instagram, they still go by their. I mean, it looks like Delicious has 3 million followers. I follow New York. Like, New York had her own reality TV show afterwards. New York made it to her own show.
Is she
Ooh, but
delicious? Is
Delicious,
getting
Delicious has
delicious is
three.
getting to your age group now, looks like.
Hey, I mean, maybe that's where it all started, right? Because they were older women when I was watching the show. What's crazy is that New Delicious has three times as many followers as New York, even though I feel like New York was way more famous than her. So that's like honestly
My
funny.
question is, do they have more followers than Flavor Flav?
You know, honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if Delicious does. She had 3.6.
Yeah. How many
Listen,
does Flavor have?
bro, Flav has like 500,000. These women all got more than him.
Lapped him.
Hey, he can always
That's
say he made
crazy.
him, you know? Yeah, he goes him
Yeah.
in his Instagram. All right, man. We gotta end the show, man. It's like
Yeah,
11:10. It's 11:10 out here. That's what we got for time. We got a lot of people that we would normally thank who weren't here, but Alex, we miss you and thank you for normally helping out behind the scenes. Come back next Sunday. I promise we'll be back on a Sunday. We forgot to apologize. Abraham had a float trip. I was really busy. Abraham was camping. I was very busy. We'll be back on Sunday for the rest of the judging of our draft and for our thoughts on 1122. Ooh, 1122. Pretty cool. In the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking us, rating, reviewing us, whether you get your pods on YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece and on Twitter at FWROP Pod. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Peace.